Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Gittin Daf Samach. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 7 lines from the top of Daf Samach. You will notice that we have some markings on the page. The crown shape we had introduced in our previous shiur. However, we will soon see a bow tie shape. So note on the side of our Gemara the Nosei / Mivneh, Nosei the topic heading, Mivneh the structural note, combined into one. The bow tie highlights She'elos v'halochas hakshurus l'ksivas Torah shebiksav. Questions and rulings, laws concerning the writing of the written Torah, the Torah shebiksav. That's in contrast to the oral law, the Torah Shebal Peh. And the issue will concern the writing of Torah Shebiksav B'tzura Chelkis in a partial fashion. In other words, what is the halacha if you plan to write only part of the Torah? Is that acceptable? Or is it such that you can only write a complete Sefer Torah? What about writing in separate scrolls the 5 books of the Chumash, Breishis by itself, Shemois by itself, etc.? You'll see that we have Roman numerals highlighting the question. So number 1, Ma'u likrois mitoch chumashim beveis haknesis. What is the halacha, the law, concerning reading in the synagogue from a Chumash? Now the term Chumash is not a reference to a book that's bound and put on the synagogue shelves that the congregants take and use for themselves, but rather kol chumish nichtav beglila nefredes. When we speak about chumish in the Gemara here, we're referring to scrolls that are written on parchment with the proper intent, the right kavona, lishma, etc. The only difference being is that you don't have all 5 books of the Chumash, the 5 books of Moses, bound into one Torah scroll. Sefer Torah Shechosir Yiru Achas. We're going to mention, make reference to a Sefer Torah that's missing one of the sections. The Sefer Torah, after all, is a Torah scroll is comprised of many, many sections that are sewn together, each section containing several columns of writing. Another issue that's going to be mentioned in the Gemara is something called a Sefer Aftarta. A Sefer Aftarta is a scroll that contains only the Haftorah readings. The Haftorah readings are the readings that we read from the prophets every Shabbos upon the conclusion of the portion of the week. That's called the Haftorah. And here we're going to make reference to a scroll that contains just each week's Haftorah portions. Is that something that's acceptable? The second topic that will be dealt with under Roman numeral number 2 is Mahu lichtoiv Megillah Latinoik l'Islami bo. Can one write a section of the Torah for children who are learning, who are studying Chumash? The names Rabbo and Rav Yosef we've highlighted with a special marking, as you can see. Now, the Gemara, 7 lines from the top. Sholchu le b'nei glila b'nei golil the Rebbe Chelvo. They sent a question. We already saw them addressing Rebbe Chelvo in our previous year. Mahu, that's b'nei golil, people from the Golil region of Israel, the northern region of Israel, sent a question to Rebbe Chelvo. Mahu likrois b'chumoshim b'veisa knesses b'tzibor. Is one allowed to read from chumoshim? And we explained they are separate books of the Torah written in scroll form. Rashi on the fourth line from the top says b'chumoshim sheyesh shekosvin lehem chamisha chumoshim kol chumish echot sholim le'atzmo. Each chumish by a complete book of the Torah, Bereishis, Shmo, separately written. V'chol sifrem hayu be'glila k'sefer Torah shelanu. All of their, when the Gemara makes reference to sforim, it's a reference to scrolls, like our Torah scroll. So the question v'negol sent to Rabbi Chelbo, can that type of chumish, can that type of Torah scroll, if you will, you can refer to it as one fifth of a Torah scroll, be used as the source for the reading in the synagogue that we practice when we speak about the Torah reading. Lo hava biyodeh. So Rabbi Chelbo didn't have an answer. Also Shaili Rizug Navcha. The question then he proposed to Rabbi Yitzchok, the lo hava biyodeh, he didn't have the answer. Also Shalbei Midrasha. The question was then brought to the base medrash where there were scholars assembled for Torah study, upashtua mehadim Reb Shmuel bar Nachmeni and Reb Yochanan, and they resolved the question from that which Reb Yochanan says. So, how did they resolve the question? From, we'll call it a precedent. Sefer Torah shechoser yiriyah achas ein karen bo, a Torah scroll that's missing one yiriyah, one section is rendered. Or is disqualified, is rendered unfit for reading from it in the synagogue. The Gemara says that answer isn't really an accurate parallel to the question. Velohi. Hasam, in Rabbi Yochanan's ruling, michsir b'milsei, it's missing. It's an item, it's a Sefer Torah, it was prepared as a Sefer Torah, but it's lacking. It's a lacking Sefer Torah. Hacha, when we speak about the Chumashim, lo michsir b'milsei, they weren't designed to be a complete Sefer Torah. They were designed to be separate Chumashim, separate books of the Torah. And as such, they're not missing anything. So one might rule that something that's lacking is disqualified for using in the shul. But something that's not lacking, it's just written as a simply written as a complete separate book of the Torah, maybe that would be okay. Rab over Rav Yosi Dami Trevayu ein koren b'chumoshim beis hakneses mishum kvod tzibor. So Rab and Rav Yosi both rule that it's not honorable, it's not befitting the public to use a single chumash for its Torah reading. Rabba Rav Yosef Dami Chavayu Hai Sefer Aftarta Osu L'mikri Bei B'Shabbos. The Sefer Aftarta we mentioned before was a scroll containing the separate Haftorahs of each week. So they rule one cannot read from that on Shabbos. My Taima, why not? The Lo Nitan Likosev, it's not something that can be written in the first place. Mar Baravashi Omar Litiltule Nami Osir. Since we're talking about Shabbos, Mar Baravashi goes a step further and says you wouldn't be allowed to even move it around on Shabbos. It would be considered muktza. My taima, what's the reason for the prohibition? Daha lo chazi lemikri bay. It's not fit to be read from, so since it's not fit to be read from, It's something that has no use for you on Shabbos. Therefore, those things that have no use for you on Shabbos cannot be moved. They're called mukta. Velo hi. The Gemara rejects that ruling. And you'll notice we have a long tichia, long rejection marking. The Gemara says that to prohibit its moving is not so. Shori little tule v'shor l'mikri bay. It's mutter to move it. It's mutter to read from it. You might say that it's mutter to read from it, and therefore it's mutter to move it. The Rabbi Yehovah of Shimon ben Lokish, Maini b'sifra dagadata b'shabata, we find that Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lokish read agadic books on Shabbos, even though v'ha lo nitan likosev, one is not allowed to write them. That's called Torah Shebal Peh. It's part of the oral tradition. Elo kevon delo efsher, eis lasus l'shem heferut osecha, since it would be impossible otherwise. It would be impossible for us to maintain the oral law, literally oral, and not write it down, because otherwise the Torah would be forgotten altogether. Be no Torah left whatsoever. So that's what the Gemara means when it says lo efsher. It would be impossible otherwise. And there's a pasuk that says, eis lasus l'shem. There are times that one has to act for Hashem, and the action for Hashem on behalf of Hashem is, in fact, heferu terosecha, involves the abrogation of the Torah itself. Later, the Gemara will present the sources for this idea that the oral law is not to be written. But once again, if we insist on not writing it, then there'll be nothing left. Well, hachinami, so too with regard to the Sefer Torah. They say they have Sefer Haftorah, the issue of writing just mere sections of the prophets in one scroll, but writing them as sections, not writing out the complete prophets, the complete book of Joshua, the complete book of Kings, etc. So too with regard to the Sefer Haftarah, kevan delo efsher, since it's not possible for every community to write an entire book of prophets. Eis lasus l'shem eferu torosecha. It's time to act, even though it involves the violation of the Torah. And what do we mean by the violation of the Torah? The idea that you're not supposed to write partial sections. When you're writing something, you're supposed to write things that are complete. Like we discussed earlier, you have to have a complete Sefer Torah, not a Sefer Torah missing a section. A complete book of the Torah, maybe. Not something that's missing. Here, we speak about a complete book of prophets, not just sections. However, if we're going to insist on that, then you're going to end up not having any Haftorah read whatsoever. Because not every community, as we said, can afford to have a complete book of prophets. I just want to mention there's a discussion in the commentaries when we say that lechatchila, by letter of law, you should have a complete book of prophets. Does it mean all the prophets? When we speak about the Tanakh, it's Torah, Nevi'im, Ksuvim, the Nun, the prophets for Nevi'im. Does it mean that the original law is that you have to have all of the prophets written into one scroll, or a complete book of each prophet separately in individual scrolls would also be considered completeness? Nevertheless, our Gemara is presenting or pointing out that even if you have a Sefer Haftarah, which is essentially fragments of each prophet, as is represented by the weekly Haftorah reading, because of Eis Lasus L'Shem Heferu Terasecha, one is entitled to read from it on Shabbos, and hence one's allowed to move it around as well. Bormine Abaye Meirabo. Abaye asks, Mahu Lichtoiv Megillah Latinoik L'Islame Ba? When we speak about a Megillah, we're referring to, as Rashi says, Parsha Levado Shel Torah Oshtayim, sections of the Torah. Can that be written for children, for their education purposes? Now, in raising the question, the Gemara makes reference to two opinions that will appear later in the Gemara. The two opinions are opinions with regard to how the Torah was prepared in the desert at the time of the original giving of the Torah. Was it written section by section as Moshe Rabbeinu received communication from the Kodesh Baruch, from the Almighty? He would record what the Almighty said to him? Or was the Torah presented, given to Moshe Rabbeinu over the years in the Midbar, but when it came to writing it down, he wrote it down all at once at the end of the sojourn in the Midbar. Those two opinions are referred to by Torah Megillah Megillah Nitna. Megillah Megillah means section by section, was given and written down. Or Chasuma Nitna is the other approach, that it, in terms of the writing, it wasn't written down until the end of 40 years in the Midbar. Up till that point, Moshe Rabbeinu managed to remember it al peh, remembered it by heart. With those two opinions in mind, we proceed now with the question. You'll notice that we used a long marking to indicate that the question lasts a few lines. Tiboyi lemanda omar Torah Megillah Megillah Nitna. The question that Abaye is posing can be presented within that opinion that the Torah was written out section by section in the Midbar, in the desert, at the beginning of the the Torah history. And Tiboyi lemanda omar Torah Chasuma Nitna, that the Torah wasn't written down section by section, but only at the end of 40 years it was written down in one complete fashion, and not section by section and then sewn together. We just presented that the point that the question can be raised according to each one, and now the Gemara elaborates. Tiboyi lemanda omar Torah Megillah Megillah Nitna. Within the opinion that says that the Torah was initially given to Moshe Rabbeinu in sections and written down thusly, section by section, two sides of the question. Kevon de Megillah Megillah Nitna, since there was precedent for the Torah being given that way, given and written down initially in the Midbar, section by section. So Kaisman, we can do that, we can use that as a precedent for children's education and write down sections of the Torah and give it to the child section by section. Oy Dilma, Kevon de Idvik Idvik. Or do we say that even though the first Sefer Torah was given over to Moshe Rabbeinu and written down section by section, but once it was sewn together, Idvik means to attach it, since all those sections eventually were attached at the end of the 40 years, forming one complete Torah scroll, that's it. There's no more heter, there's no more permission for writing the Torah down in mere sections. Tiboyi lemanda omar, the same question can be raised within the opinion Torah chasuma nitna, that the Torah was not written down in the Midbar until the end of 40 years as a complete Torah scroll. Kevon dechasuma nitna ein kosvin. You might say that since the original Torah was written only as a complete entity, not section by section, so too when it comes to writing down Torah sections, no, one cannot do that. Oy Dilma, Kevon delo efsher. Or when it comes to child education, there is no other way. What, to expect an entire Torah scroll to be written out for each child who's going to study Torah, that's not something that can easily be done. Whether it's even if you write a very small Sefer Torah, which a child might be able to carry around, but nevertheless, it's probably something that is quite expensive. And to provide each child with his own complete Sefer Torah would be something unreasonable. So, since it's impossible to have a complete Torah, Kasvinan will allow for child education sections to be written. Omar Le, so Rabo answers, Ein Kasvin. Uma Tam, and why not? Lefi, She Ein Kasvin. Now that seems to be redundant, but Rashi explains, Lefi She Ein Kasvin. Yafilu lemandom Megillah Megillah Nitna, even according to the opinion that the Torah in the Midbar, but with regard to Moshe Rabbeinu, was written down section by section. Cave on the Idbik, since it was stuck together at the end of 40 years, that is it. Esve. And here you see a new marking, a volcano shape or trapezoid. On the side, we have a mivneh, a structural note. Nisyonos lahakshus al apsak she'osu lichtav megillah latinok. These are attempts to question Rabbah's ruling, which prohibits the writing of Megillah for a tinok. Mi makoros, the questions will be from sources. Shel hatavla, shel parsha soita, shenira ksuva keparsha nifredes. We're going to be referring to a special gold plate on which the parsha of Sota was engraved. Parsha of Sota is the reference to that section of the Torah from Sefer Bamidbar and Parshas Nosai, which describes the married woman who fell under suspicion of being immoral. There's a section of the Torah that is to be written on parchment in the Beis HaMikdash for the Sota process. And that portion of the Torah is then erased over water, and the Sota woman, the suspected woman, drinks from it. The master parsha appears to have been prepared on a golden plate from which they would copy over what's on the gold plate onto the parchment that the Sota would read from. As far as the parchment that the Sota reads from, that's not going to figure in our discussion. That's a separate, we'll call Gzeres HaKosuv. But that's a separate Torah ruling. But when it comes to writing sections of the Torah, we have a source. Let's continue now in the Gemara. Esfe, Afhi. That's he is a pronoun. It's referring to her. Her is Hilni or Hileni Hamalka. Osta Tavla Shel Zav. This queen, Hileni the queen, prepared a golden plate. Sheparshas Sota Ksuva Aleha. The psukim that we refer to as Parshas Sota, the section from Sefer Bamidbar and Parshas Nosa, was engraved on this golden plate. As we said before, they would use this to copy from that onto parchment that which the Sota would need for her Sota ritual. What's the point? We see here a section of the Torah written out on this gold plate, so that you're allowed to write sections. Omer of Shimon ben Lakish, Mishum Reb Yanai, Be'alef Beis. No, it wasn't written out. It was just abbreviations. Aleph Beis is a reference to the letters. The first letter of each word, let's say, was written on this plate. And since those who were in the Beis HaMikdash preparing the Parshas Sota, they would look at this, and each letter would remind them of what the right word is. But to write out entire verses of the Torah without writing a complete Sefer Torah, that would not be allowed. Esve, we ask a question again, focusing on that plate, the golden plate. Kishu Kaisei, when they would copy over onto the parchment for the Sota ritual, Roya the Kaisei Maase Kosu Batavla, the scribe would look and write over exactly that which was engraved on the plate. So we know that they didn't write just abbreviations. When it came to preparing that special parchment for the Sota, they wrote entire verses. And we see from here that on that golden plate, the entire verse had been written out. The Gemara says, no. Ema kema shekosuv batavla. It means, kema means like or approximation. But Rashi says, kema shekosuv lufiha simonim hoya mevin v'kosev. Looking at the plate would enable him to write out the necessary verses in their complete form, but not that on the plate were complete verses appearing. Esvei, well, we ask again, Kishu Kaisev, when the scribe would write the Parsha Sota for the Sota ritual, Roya Batavla, he would look at the golden plate for Kaisev Mashikosa Batavla. He would write that which was engraved on the plate. Mahu kosuf batavla, and what's written on the plate. Im shochav, im lo shochav. These are psukim from the Parshas Sota. Regarding the woman, if she behaved immorally or if she did not behave immorally. But we see from this Tanaic source that there weren't mere letters written on the plate, just abbreviations, but it seems that entire verses were written out. So the Gemara answers, Hocha b'maya skinon, here with regard to the golden plate, what is it really featuring? The sirugin. Rashi says, "B'sirugin tchilas amikra hoyakosuv teva shlemo lebesof Rashi tevas." My understanding of the Rashi is that each pasuk would appear having the first word of the pasuk written out completely, but then the following words till the end of each verse, just the letters. And all of these answers, they show you that you cannot write a mere section of the Torah. And Rabba went so far as to say that is going to apply to children education as well. Gemara goes on to say, Ketanoi, the issue is a machlokes tanoyim. Ein kosvin megillah letinog lisnam libo. One is not allowed to write a section of the Torah for a child for his Torah education. V'im daitu lahashlim mutar. If you have the intent, though, to complete it, in other words, the child is going to be presented with sections, and your intention is to eventually complete a Sefer Torah section after section after section, then it would be allowed. But to write a section of the Torah for the child, and that being the, we'll say, the ends in itself, that would not be allowed. Rabbi Yehuda Oimer Bevreishis Adora Mabel. Rabbi Yehuda did, as we said, he is a different opinion. You are allowed to write out sections. For example, in Sefer Bereishis, you would write from the beginning until the generation of the flood, and you would give that to the child, and that's what he would study. But Toras Kehanim, when it comes to Sefer Vayikra, Toras Kehanim is a reference to Sefer Vayikra, Ad Vayhi Bayoim Hashmini. You would write from the beginning of Sefer Vayikra until Parshas Shmini, which you have there, Parshas Vayikra, Parshas Tzav, which contains in it the commandments regarding sacrifices. And that would be given to a child, and it's okay. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a new marking on the side. We have our Nosei Mivne heading. And we've written on the side, Machlokes Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, Eich Nichtav HaTorah Ayadei Moshe Bamidbar. The very topic that we were referring to earlier here, as promised, appears in the Gemara. How was the Torah written by Moshe Rabbeinu during the 40 years in the desert? Rabbi Yochanan says, Megillah, Megillah, Nitna. It was written out section by section, and then eventually all sewn together at the end. Reish Lakish, no. Torah Chasuma Nitna. It was written out in one continuous, in one shot, in one period of time, not over the 40 years. It was absorbed by Moshe Rabbeinu. He learned it over the 40 years, but was remembering it Baal Peh, by heart. The Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Beno. Torah, Megillah, Megillah, Nitna. The Torah was given, but it means that Moshe Rabbeinu, when he would be taught from the Almighty a section of the Torah, he would write it down. Shenemar Oz Omarti Nebosi B'Megillas Sefer Kosov Olai. Without getting into the details, as far as the posuk is concerned, you'll notice that Rashi provides more background to it, but you see a reference in this verse to Megillah Sefer, the Torah referred to as something written in sections. Reb Shimon ben Lakish Omer, Torah Chasuma Nitna. Shenemar, the posuk says, Lokoyach es Sefer HaTorah Hazos. From this posuk, one concludes that it was presented as a Sefer Torah, a complete book, a complete scroll, not written out section by section over time. V'idach, and here in the next few lines of Gemara, you'll notice we're using a squiggle underline to indicate the back and forth discussion, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. So the Gemara focuses now on Rabbi Yochanan, V'idach nami haksiv lokoach. As far as Rabbi Yochanan says, what does he do with the pasuk that said lokoach, which we said indicated a complete Sefer Torah? Rabbi Yochanan will answer, Ahu lebosur didbak. That's true. It was a complete Sefer Torah after all the sections that were written over the 40 years were sewn together, were stuck together. However, just to repeat, as far as Rabbi Yochanan is concerned, the actual writing of the Sefer Torah took place section by section over 40 years. V'idach, nami haksiv. Now we turn to Reish Lakish and we ask, well, according to you, does it not say b'megillas Sefer Kosev Alai, that the Torah was in Megillah form written section by section? Reish Lakish says, no, that's not what the pasuk means. Hahu, what that is coming to tell me, we have a little aleph here because there is another pshat that we have in a few lines, the Inami Beis, you can see two lines later. But in the meantime, the first pshat, what does Reish Lakish do? What does he derive from the pasuk Megillah Sefer Kosev Alai? Hahu, the Chol HaTorah Kula Ikri Megillah. That pasuk indicates that the term Megillah is a term referring to the entire Sefer Torah. Difti Vayomer Elai Mo'ato Royeh Vayomer Ani Royeh Megillah Afa. That's a prophecy, a vision of the prophet Zechariah, who had a vision of a Sefer Torah. And you can see in the pasuk, he refers to the Sefer Torah as a Megillah. Inami, Lichud Rebbe Levi. Another way of understanding, as far as Reish Lakish is concerned, the pasuk that says the Megillas Sefer Kosev Alai, there, we'll say there is an exception to the rule. As far as Reish Lakish is concerned, there were 8 portions that were in fact written out immediately, and as Reb Levi teaches, the Yom Rabbi Levi, Shmeina Parshias Nemru B'Yoyim Shehukam Boi HaMishkan. There were 8 separate sections of the Torah that were stated, that were taught on the day the Mishkan was set up. And what are those 8 sections? The Gemara here lists them off. What the, we'll say, the urgency or the immediacy of each one of those sections as is relevant to the day the Mishkan was set up, Rashi provides all of the background. But for our purposes, these sections needed to be, after Moshe Rabbeinu heard from the Ribbono Shel Olam, from the Almighty, their respective contents, they needed to be written down, given over to all those involved in the Mishkan and the beginning of the sacrificial activity. We take a look at Rashi before the end of the narrow lines, toward the end of the narrow lines, Omar Inami Rabbi Levi, Ikroi Megillah. The term Megillah Sefer can refer to Rabbi Levi's teaching. Oison Shmoyne Parshias, those 8 sections from the Torah, Shehutzrechu Liyoyim Nemru V'Nichtavu, they were needed on that day, so they were stated and written down, V'Nimsuru Bo Bayom, and given over to Aaron and his sons who functioned as Kehanim, v'nichtavu kol achas b'megillah vada, and each section was written on a separate parchment. L'fishim uvdolos urchokizu mezu, there you can't write them all together one after the other because they're from different parts of the Torah. They're separate and distant from one another. Hilkoch kori l'shar nami megillah. Since we're already writing down 8 separate sections of the Torah because of, we'll say, the urgency of the matter, the immediate necessity. So the rest of the Sefer Torah is also called Megillah because each part of the Torah between each one of these sections that's not being written then becomes separate sections also. Because at the end of the 40 years, when it was necessary to complete it, so you'd have to write from the beginning of Bereishis until Sefer Vayikra. That was not written out on the day the Mishkan was set up. The Mishkan was set up in the second year of their sojourn in the Midbar. We're talking about a period of 40 years. So the rest of the Sefer Torah, like from the beginning till Parshas Kehanim, Parshas Kehanim is the section where the laws of sacrifices appear. So, actually, technically speaking, Rashi says that the laws of Kehanim, those are the laws concerning their prohibition to defile themselves, laws concerning Kehanim that are blemished, etc. But from the beginning of the Torah till that point, that was then written at the end of the 40 years. V'dileg Parshas Kehanim Aksuva Kvar, and then at the end of the 40 years, there was no need to write Parshas Kohanim again. V'kosev mi Parshas Kohanim ad Parshas Shluch Tameim, then they would have written the section of the Torah between Parshas Kehanim and the Parsha dealing with sending the defiled out of the camp, which was one of those portions that was necessary to write immediately. So now the Gemara gives us the list of those eight sections that were, in fact, even Reish Lakish acknowledges they would have been written immediately as soon as Moshe Rabbeinu received them and, as we said, wrote them over and gave them to those involved with the Mishkan. D'yomer Rabbi Levi, Shmoyne Parshas Nemru B'yom Shukam Bo Yom Mishkan, Eluhain, and now we read the list, Parshas Kehanim, Parshas Leviim, Parshas Temeim, Parshas Shiluach Temeim, Parshas Achrei Mois, we continue at the top of Omid Beis, Uparshas Shtuya Yayin, Uparshas Neros, Uparshas Pora Aduma. As we said, each one of these Parshas and their relevance is described by Rashi. We continue in the Gemara with a new marking. We have on the side under the Nosei Mivneh heading, the double underline that you see represents or highlights a machlokes between Yossi Rebbe Lozer and Rabbi Yochanan. You can see their names easily by just looking in the Gemara. There's a machlokes b'ma tolui roiv haTorah. We speak about the Torah. What constitutes the majority, the rove of the Torah? What are the possibilities? Bedroshes amashe kosuv. Is the majority of the Torah based on hermeneutic laws of Torah analysis based on the actual scripture? Kamo gezeira shava klalu prat. There's the use of word comparisons or principles that Rabbi Yishmael made famous, the klal uprat method of darshaning. We don't have to detail what they are. All one should recognize is that these are approaches to discovering Torah laws through focusing on actual psukim. There's another area of Torah, bedvorim she'en lehem remez b'kra, things that don't have any reference in the pasuk itself. Elo nemru l'moshe al peh, they were taught to Moshe Rabbeinu by heart, and it was that information was communicated generation after generation by heart, bal peh, orally. Not there are laws that are not found in the Chumash, and they're not even based on psukim. So, what area or what of these two possibilities? What constitutes the majority of Torah law? Or maybe more accurately, let's say, what constitutes the source of the majority of Torah law? One should not make the mistake and say, well, what do you mean? It's obvious that when you would take, let's say, a Talmud, a complete Talmud, which represents the oral tradition, and compare it volume-wise to a Sefer Torah, so there are many, many more words in a complete Talmud, the oral law, than there are in a Sefer Torah. So the Ritva points out that that's not the issue over here. When we speak about the Talmud, let's say, being a lengthy work, that's a function of the multiple opinions on each topic. We're not dealing with the issue of machloikism, of disagreements that evolved over time, but we're referring to an earlier period when the Torah had still been quite clear, we'll say prior to the era of controversy that set in over time. But originally, the oral tradition was not necessarily voluminous. So now, with that background, we turn to the Gemara. Amar Rav Elazar, Torah roiv b'ksav u'miut al peh. The Torah is Torah law. The majority of it is based on scriptures and derivations from the written word. U'miut, the minority of Torah law, is based on that which was communicated through oral tradition, pure oral tradition, without a basis in the scripture. And now, where does Reb Elazar get this from? Shenemar, Echtoiv loy rubi toirasi kemozar nechshevu. In this pasuk, you see the writing of is the rov, the written law, the written word represents the majority. Reb Yochanan Rama roiv al peh umiut b'ksav. Reb Yochanan says the opposite, that the majority of Torah law is that which is purely oral, and the minority is that which is derived through scriptural derivation. Shenemar ki alpi hadvarim ho'ela. Alpi, alpe, means something oral. We take a look at the Rashi. Ki alpi al shebalpe nichras bris. The pasuk says, makes reference to the establishment of a covenant between the Almighty and the Jewish people. And with regard to the covenant, it says, Ki al pi hadvorim ho'ele, I established my covenant. Well, if you're going to establish your covenant, you're probably going to establish it over that which is the mainstay of the Torah. So, Rabbi Yochanan from here derives that the majority is that which is al pi. You can see this pasuk, by the way, is quoted later in the Gemara in a more complete form. About less than halfway down the page, you'll see it says, "Ki al pi advor ma'ela korati itcha bris v'es Yisrael." I made my covenant with you and the Jewish people over that which is oral. And we go back over the opinions, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar. What does each one do with the other one's pasuk? V'idach Rabbi Yochanan nami haksiv echtoiv loy rubi toirasi. What does Rabbi Yochanan, who said the majority is based on pure oral tradition, do with the verse that Rabbi Elazar cited? The verse had said echtoiv loy rubi toirasi kemozar nechshevu. So Rabbi Yochanan answers. He says, "Ahu atmuye komatma." The pasuk is to be read in a tone of wonderment, of question, of amazement. Echtov lo rubi torosi, halo kamo zar nechshevu. In order to appreciate this, let's take a look at the Tosfos' approach. The top Tosfos at Mui Kamatma b'Medrash Amrinon kamo zar nechshevu. What does that mean? The word zar means a stranger. She'ovdei kechavim kosfu es hatera. The idol worshippers, the Gentiles, have also written over the Torah. The Christian world, the Muslim world, possibly, they've also written down what we our Torah and claim it as theirs. If everything would have been written out, the Gentiles would have written it all out and claimed it as theirs. And therefore the Almighty says, do you want me to write out the majority? That which I did write out is like a stranger. Shetiku Zorim. They, the Gentiles, copied it over and claim it as theirs. So Rabbi Yochanan, in looking at the pasuk of Echtov Lo Rubi, he says it doesn't mean that the majority is that which is written, but rather should I write over that which is the majority, namely the oral law, should that also be something written down, lending it or subjecting it to being plagiarized or usurped by the Gentiles of the world, claiming it to be theirs? Of course not. V'idoch nami hoksiv Reb Elozer. We're continuing the Gemara. According to Reb Elozer, does it not say ki al pi hadvarim leile? And we explained before that the covenant between the Almighty and the Jewish people was established through the Torah, and specifically through the oral Torah. And wouldn't that indicate that it represents the majority? The Gemara says no. Hahu, the establishment of the covenant over the oral Torah, not because it's the majority, but mishum de tekifi lemigmarinu. It's, tekifi means something that's strong or difficult or tough or challenging to learn it, to absorb it, to retain it possibly. So something that requires greater exertion, even if it doesn't represent the majority, is nevertheless the basis of the covenant. Dorash Rabbi Yehuda bar Nachmeni miturgimane de Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Rabbi Yehuda bar Nachmeni was the miturgimon of Reish Lakish. What's a miturgimon? A rabbi would deliver a Torah lecture, but he wouldn't be the one whose voice was necessarily audible to the masses. There was someone who would stand by his side and listen to what the rabbi said, and he, the miturgimon, as he is called, would say it over for the public. So that was the role that Rabbi Yehuda bar Nachmeni had with regard to Reish Lakish. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda bar Nachmeni holds forth and says, "Ksiv." On the one hand, the pasuk says, "Ksiv lecha es hadvar me'ele." The point is, he's trying to present what seems to be a contradiction. The Torah is it written, or is it al peh, or not written? How do we resolve these two psukim? Answer: Dvarim shebeksav yat Torah shelom al peh. That which is written out, you are not to recite it by heart, but rather, if you are making reference to the written law, read from that which is written. Do not say it by heart. Dvarim shal baal peh, that which is the oral tradition, e atah rashoy lomer miksav, you're not allowed to write it down. Rashi across from here says, dvarim shal baal peh atah rashoy lekosvan mikan atah lomer. From here, we conclude Shahat Talmud lo nitan lichtov. The Talmud, which we're engaged in right now, as we're learning the Gemara, is something that should not be written down. El Bnei Shal Torah Mishtakachas. If it wouldn't have been written down, so it would have been forgotten. But there's the original way things were envisioned is that it wouldn't be written down. So, if, however, we're confronted with a situation of no oral Torah whatsoever, or yes, oral law, but presented in a, we'll say, an otherwise forbidden way, we will opt for the latter. The Ritva has a very interesting lashon on this, and he says that nowadays that the sar shel shikha, the ministering angel or spiritual force in charge of forgetfulness, is very prominent. He has a lot of, let's say, influence on us. Because of that, so in order to take, we'll say, countermeasures to his presence, we allow it to be written down based on the pasuk we mentioned earlier today, Eis lasus l'Hashem heferu tosech. It's the time to act on behalf of the Almighty. And in order to act on his behalf, unfortunately, we have to, hefer to say, we have to violate other aspects of his own Torah. Let me just mention by way of a stern warning that in order to activate this principle of Eis Lasos Lashem Eferu Tarasecha, this is not something that any Tom, Dick, and Harry can come along and claim to be the case in order to justify any type of, say, aberration of Jewish law, as unfortunately we have seen over the millennia, and certainly in recent times, where things, where justification will be made for what people will consider preserving the Jewish community by enabling Shabbos violation, and claiming that if we don't allow people to drive their automobiles or their vehicles or whatever to the temple of worship, so there will be no more Jewish community. And as a result, people will use this argument of Eis Las Lashem Heferu Tasecha, so you see that you can violate Shabbos in order to preserve communal worship in temples, even though it's at the expense of Sabbath observance. Well, that's a lot of hot air, to put things mildly and to be somewhat politically correct. There would be more appropriate adjectives that we'll, of course, refrain from using in describing that. That is, in effect, the destruction of Judaism. That's just Heferu Tarasecha without the Eis Lasos Lashem aspect of things. So as we said, the great sages of old, of the Talmud, of the Talmudic period, had that power to institute rulings based on this concept. But it's not something that the one on their own, through his own analysis of situations, is entitled to employ. We continue in the Gemara. Ma'arvin Bebayis. We have to correct ourselves. Debei Rabbi Yishmael Tana. In the yeshiva of Rabbi Yishmael, it was taught, the posuk uses the word eile. We saw ki al pi hadvorim ho eile. We also saw ksoiv luchas hadvorim ho eile. The word eile is to be understood eile ato koisev. Ksoiv luchas hadvorim ho eile. These things you can write. Vi ato koisev halochas. But oral tradition you cannot write down. So on the posuk of ksoiv luchas hadvorim ho eile, we see only this can be written and not the oral tradition. Before we continue in the Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a nosei, a topic heading, which reads, Ein l'ha'avir mokoim ha'eruv chatzeros mibayas l'bayas achir mipnei ha'chashad. We, of course, explained this in our Mishnah, in our previous shiur. The bread, the communal food that's collected for the purpose of Eruv Chatzeros, once it's placed in a particular house, it's expected to stay there week after week, because otherwise it will create a problem. Let's put it that way, not being too specific, so that we can now go into the Gemara. The Mishnah mentioned that the Eruv, word Ma'arvin, is a reference to the food collected for the purpose of the Eruv Chatzeres, which we explained in our previous year. The Bayis Yoshan means in the old house, means in the original house where it was originally placed after all the members of the Chatzer had made their contribution. So the food stays in the original house for Darkei Shalom purposes. My time. What's the explanation of this? Ilema mishum kavoid. If you think it has to do with a matter of honor of the original homeowner, and if you're going to switch the Eruv Chatzeros from one house to someone else's house, it will be a violation of of the original homeowner's honor. Well, that's not true, though. V'ha hahu shipura, there was the case of the shofar. Now, the shofar referred to here is not a reference to the shofar of Rosh Hashanah. It's a reference to, according to Rashi, it's the shofar that was blown every Friday to announce the oncoming of Shabbos, and people should stop doing melacha before Shabbos sets in. That's discussed at greater length in Masechah Shabbos. So the reference is to that shofar. There's another shofar explanation that Tosfos mentions. It's a shofar in which monies, coins, were collected and stored in the shofar. There's precedent for that. You have in the Maseches Tomid, if I'm not mistaken, shofros that were used for also in Parsha, and I should say Maseches Shkolim, more accurately, there was reference to shofars that were used for storing money. In this case, we're Tosfos explains, we're referring to shofars that were held by the heads of the Torah Academy. Monies were collected, were donated, and then distributed to the students. So the reference to shofar is made here by the Gemara, and there was the case of the shofar. Dahava Meikora Bei Rav Yehuda, originally was in Rav Yehuda's house. Ulebasof Bei Rabba, and afterwards in Rabba's house. Ulebasof Bei Rav Yosef. Ulebasof Bei Abai. Ulebasof Bei Rava. So you see that the issue of maintaining something in one house for the sake of the honor of the Balabayas, that doesn't seem to be a controlling factor. Ela mishum chashoda, the concern with regard to the Mishnah of Ma'ar v'Bayas Yoshe, not to move the Eruv Chatzeros from one house to the next, has to do with arousing suspicion. And here too you have a number of different opinions as to what the suspicion would be, but we'll just share one pshat with you. The Tosfos has an additional pshat, but one pshat is that if the Eruv Chatzeros is not found in the original house, the house that people, let's say, were used to seeing it, imagine you would walk into that house and not see the Eruv Chatzeros. Maybe it was transferred to someone else's house, but the person who comes in and doesn't see it in its original place will think that it's not around anymore, and people are carrying in and out of their houses, from their houses to the chotzer, to the courtyard, the communal courtyard, illegally, in violation of the rabbinic laws of Shabbos, so as to avoid suspicion, which when you arouse suspicion, you also can arouse enmity, and that would be a violation of Darkei Shalom, of having the ways of peace and tranquility. So we don't want the Eruv Chatzeros to be moved from one house to the other. As we said, there are more pshatim on what the chashad is. You're invited to look into the Tosfos and other commentaries. We continue with another one of the details mentioned in the Mishnah. Bor Shukorov La'amo, the pit, the water storage pit that's closest to the stream. And once again, we explained this at some length when we learned the Mishnah. So we're not going to go over what we mentioned in our previous shiur. However, before we go on in the Gemara, we glance at the side, the Nosei, Machlokis Rav Shmuel. We're going to see a disagreement between Rav and Shmuel, Be'inyan Hashkoyas Sodois, regarding the watering of fields, Sheshochnois Al Yad Arutze Mayim Zormim, that lie along a channel of flowing water. The Gemara, Itmar, Bnei Nahara, the residents who live with their fields along the banks of a river. Rav Omar Tatoi Shosu Maya Bereisha, Rav says those that are downstream Shosumai literally drink the water, but it has to do with watering their fields. First, Shmuel Amar Eloi Shosu Maya Bresha. Those that are upstream, water first. So far, this is quite vague. Like, what are the circumstances? What do you mean, first, second, water, a river flows, it flows. What's the issue of who's first, who's second? So the Gemara clarifies. B'demezal kuli alma lo pligi. And we look at Rashi. The Rashi that we're looking at is just a couple lines down from here. B'demezal kuli alma lo pligi im einon sochrim es hanar. If there is no practice in this area of damming up the river, ela doilin v'hoichin, rather everyone, doilin has to do with drawing water from with pails or other devices, drawing water from the river, panor moshech kipashtoi, and the water of the river flows in its normal course. Kuliyama lo pligi, there's no argument, shekola roitzin lidlos yidla, that anyone who wants to draw water goes and draws water at his will. There's no issue of upper people, lower people. So we continue in the Gemara. Ki pligi, when does a controversy arrive between Rav and Shmuel? B'miskar vashkiyeh. Miskar has to do with damming up. In other words, you've got a field located on the banks of the river, but the river, the water level itself is quite a bit down, is lower down. And the style, the way in which people would water their fields was by damming up the river at a certain point, raising the water level. The water would then be available, will flow into the fields through little irrigation ditches. The water level, once it would rise sufficiently, the little irrigation ditches would be filled with water, and that's how fields were watered. Let's look at Rashi, who gives a nice description of this. Ki pligi b'miskar v'ashkiyeh she'ein boy kedei lidlois kulon yachad. It's a minor stream or very large fields. Whatever the case is, there isn't enough water in this channel for all of the residents, all of the field owners, to draw water at once.
The
people that live upstream want to dam it up, preventing the water from continuing downstream. So those people upstream would prefer to dam up the river. The water level would naturally rise, and it would rise sufficiently to fill the irrigation ditches that run through their fields to be filled, and then release the dam, open the dam, and let the water continue flowing. The tachtonim me'akfin amleim, and the people downstream don't like that. Elo im kein nashke anachnu tchila, unless we get a chance to water our fields first, and that would involve, of course, damming the stream downstream next to their fields, and so they would take care of their needs and then be done with it and let the upper stream guys do their thing. So as we saw in the Gemara, this is the case where you have the Machlokas Rav and Shmuel. That's what the Gemara refers to as B'miskar V'ashkiyeh. The word miskar, the root of the word is sin, is a samach, chof resh, secher. Secher is a dam. So it's damming, ashkuyeh, l'hashkos is to water. So damming and watering. Shmuel Omar, Eloi Shosumai Beresha. According to Shmuel, the upper fellows, upper stream guys, water first. The Amri, they say, Anan Mekarvinon Tfei. We're closer to the origin of the water source. Rav Omar Tatoi Shosu Maya Beresha. Rav argues that the guys lower stream have the upper hand, they have the final say. The Amri, their argument is, Naro Kepashte Lezel. Let the river continue flowing its normal course. In other words, don't tamper with the Don't dam up the river first. Let it flow its normal course down to our area. We'll dam it up at the lower part of our field. Our fields will get watered, and then do whatever you need to do. Tanan. We have a Tanaic source. It says, Bor HaKoroiv La'amo Mismale Rishon Lebnei Darkei Shalom. So this is a Tanaic source. The word HaKorov would indicate upper stream, upstream. They're the ones that take care of their fields first. And that appears like Shmuel, who said, Eloi Shosu Maya Bereisha. And that would be then a kasha from the Mishnah on Rav. Tirgim HaShmuel Liba DeRav. And here you have a phenomenon that you find from time to time in the Shas, that the, we'll call it the victorious sounding opinion, the, in this case Shmuel, sounded like the accepted or the more easily understood opinion. In other words, he defends his adversary. That's because the Talmud is basically a book seeking truth, so that if an argument is to be made but it's not a rock solid argument, so then even though it might appear beneficial for your opinion, for your side, you're not necessarily going to want it, and you'll show how it can be refuted or explained on behalf of the other party. So here Shmuel takes this source and explains it aliba de Rav, for the benefit of Rav. Be'amo hamishaleches al pi boro. We take a look at Rashi. The source that spoke about Bor HaKorov Lama Mismale Rishon, that's Bamasaches Al Pibo. Rashi says Shemismale Me Elov Kederach Hilucho Ve'Ein Tzorach Liskor Hanor. That's referring to a case where there is no damming that's needed. The water level of the river is such that it will fill the pits that would fill with water and be available as a constant water supply, or a water supply for hard times. Those pits get filled up without any damming. So in a case like that, the fellow upstream is entitled to have his pit filled first. The Gemara continues. Ihachi, if it's talking about a case where the pit gets filled up on its own without any damming, my lamemro, and what's the point of teaching it? It seems to be quite obvious. Mahu detema, without the Mishnah, I would have thought, motzi amri lei, that the people low downstream could say, sochar miskar va'ashki behindiza. Rashi says, sochar miskar pirush borcha. Here it means close up your pit, shelo yerdu hamayim lusoychai, so that water shouldn't go from the flowing river into your pit. Shememayit meshichasanor, because as long as your pit is open, it reduces the force and the stream of the river flow. The Rashi goes on, veashki behindizah. Kfi ma shiya leloch lidlois min meshichas hanor kamonu. And you draw water. Once your pit would be shut, you'll then draw water and water your field just like we do. Kamo de mahandazi adodim shes chulin. The word hindaza is found also in Maseches Chulin. Let us read the Tosfos Rid commentary also, who explains what the Havamin is, what I would have thought without the Mishnah. So we're looking at the Tosfos Rid. You'll notice we have a little star toward the end of his commentary that you find on the side of the Gemara. Reading the Tosfos Rid, he says, Pirush hoyisi oimer, I would have thought without the Mishnah, shiyom relo hatachtoinim, the people downstream could tell the fellow upstream, hiskir pi borcha, close your pit entrance, umale min ha'anor kamohu, and draw water from the river like we do, kafi ma shiale loch b'mazolcha, as much as you'll be able to draw with your luck. That's what I would have thought. So we continue in the Gemara. after presenting what I would have thought, so komash malon, the Mishnah says that the people downstream cannot tell the fellow upstream to close up his pit, which is, as we emphasize, is getting filled up automatically. The Gemara continues, Omar Rav Tuna Bar Tachlifa, Hashta Velo Itmar Hilchas Velo Kemar Velo Kemar. At this point, the final ruling, like Rav or Shmuel, hasn't been said. So, we don't have a ruling on that. Kol Da'olim Govar. The stronger one, whoever has more force, will win out. Rav Simi Bar Ashi, also Lekamei Da'baye. We have a triangle marking, and on the side, under the Nosei Mivneh heading, we have Shnei Maisim. We have two stories, one here, and you can see another triangle, three lines from the bottom. In these two incidents, Shmuel ben Abaye, Abaye is involved in both of them. Be'inyan Hashkoes Sodos, the theme here has to do with the watering of fields, Ayadei Tipul Benaros, having to do with some type of action or reconstruction or tampering with rivers. The Gemara. Rav Simi Barashi, Osla Kamei Dabaye. Rav Simi approached Abaye, Omar Lay, and Rav Simi said, Loisvon Mor Beidna. I want to have time to study with you at a fixed time every day. Omar Lay, Isli Idna Ladidi. Well, the time that I have for Torah study, I need for myself. So he, Rav Simi says, Velosman Mar Balelo, maybe at night we can arrange to study together. Omar Le, Isli Mayel Eshkiye. Well, at night, I'm preoccupied with watering my fields. Omar Le, so Rav Simi says, you know what, I have an idea. He says, Ano Mashkino Le Lamor Maya Viyamamo, I'll water your fields by day. And so you, of course, by day, as you said, will be able to study for your own Torah's needs. And we can study together at night. So Abai said, that's a good deal. That's fine. Lechai means fine. I agree. Ozal le'iloi, Rav Simi, he then, and we have, by the way, we have a little diagram on the side of the Gemara. And you'll notice on the in the diagram, Abaye's field, where this is an aerial view, and Abaye's field is located in the middle between an upper stream field and that's Eloi and Tatoi, the lower stream. And there's a water flow that's flowing along these streams. So now Rav Simi's got this plan. Ozal le'iloi, Rav Simi goes to the fellows upstream. Omar lohu, and he tells them, Tatoi shosu maya bereisha. He says, this hopefully reminds you of the machlokas Rav and Shmuel we saw before. So this is Rav's opinion, that the people lower stream have the upper hand. They have the rights to call the shots, and you people cannot dam up the river. And on our chart, you could see where one might have thought that the upper stream guys could dam up the river, enabling their fields to be watered first. So Rav Simi says, you can't do anything. You cannot dam it up at that point. And Ozal le'tatoi, and the same Rav Simi went to the guys low downstream, Omar lehu, he says, Eloi shosu maya bereisha. The fellows upstream, they have first choice. They have the upper hand. They water first. Now, and the result of saying Eloi shosu maya bereisha, you'll notice if you look at our chart where a dam would be placed. So you can see a dam would be placed right before the water reaches the area opposite the guys downstream. And Adohachi, in the meantime, as the Gemara goes on, Adohachi Socher Miskar Vashki. So Rav Simi Bar Ashi erected a dam right above the low field, enabling Abaye's field to be watered. Ki also the Kamed Abaye, when he came to Abaye, Amalei So Rabbi reacted to what Rav Simi had done and said, "Kebet Trei Abdisli, what have you done here? You've applied the ruling of both Rav and Shmuel. They argue with one another. How can you do that? How can you rule like both argument, or both opinions that are essentially against one another? This is not an acceptable. It's not an acceptable way to rule." Falo ta'aminu Abaye lepirida hi shosa. Abaye did not benefit, did not taste the produce of that year's crop. We continue with another incident. Before we look at the Gemara text, let's try to understand things by looking at our diagram. Notice the diagram again on the side. There's a river. It's called Nahar Shinvisaw. That's the name of the river, the Shinvisaw River. It's flowing, and there are fields along the river. There's an Eloi, an upper field. There is something that we on our chart called Sodoseim, their fields. That's going to be relevant to the Gemara story. And then there are, an area that's below those fields. There's a river flowing, and what we're going to see in the Gemara is an attempt on the people that we've labeled Sodoseim to rechannel the river, or to, let's say, dig a ditch from the river around their fields, as you can see in the diagram. In other words, the above their fields, when you say above, we mean upstream, above their fields, the water will of the river, instead of flowing with a solid current downstream, the water will be redirected. Some of the water, at least, will be redirected around these people's fields, creating an ample source of water for their fields. All sides of the field are now accounted for with a water supply. And then downstream, as you can see on the diagram, the water would be rechanneled back into the river. Now the Gemara. Hano b'nei Becharmoch. Becharmoch is the name of a city. So you have a people from Charmoch. The Ozel Koru Beresha de Shanvisa. They dug a channel above their fields. V'adrua v'shadrua b'shili nara. And they redirected the water around their fields back into the river. Asu Eloi Lekame Dabaye. The people upstream from their fields, they came with a complaint to Abaye Omrule. They said to Abaye, Komaskil Lenaharin. We take a look at the Rashi on the third line under the Gemara text, Komaskil Lenaharin. Nohar Shelanu Niskal. Niskal has to do with an accumulation of debris. Vipnei Shehasivuhu V'eino Nimshach Maher. The water is not flowing quickly. V'tzofim hamayim derech sodoseinu or sodoseihem. And that's creating, since the water is not flowing downstream quickly, the water level is rising. Shekein derech hanor hamesav ein meimov kalin lorutz. There's a river who's been redirected. The water flow is not swift, because of this bend in it. And since the water is not flowing swiftly, so debris and rocks, which ordinarily would be swept downstream, is not happening now. So now let's continue in the Gemara. Omar Lahu, so Abaye said, Koru Bahadayu Tfei Purta. He offers them a suggestion to dredge out, to deepen the channel. And if you deepen the channel at right before the river takes its turn, the water will flow swiftly. Omru le, so they said to Abaye, the people of Charmoch said to Abaye, I should say the Eloi, the people upstream from the Charmoch people said to Abaye, Koyavshi Pirin. Well, we're going to dredge out the river so the water level is going to become lower, and the irrigation ditches that ordinarily filled up by the original river water level are going to go dry. Omar Lahu. So now Abaye says to the Bnei Charmoch, Zilu Saliku Nafshaychu Mehosam. He literally means you remove yourselves from there, but what he's telling them is you've got to seal up that channel that you dug surrounding your fields. In other words, restore the water flow to its original way in light of the damage to the people upstream. The Gemara continues, Mitzidus chai v'oifus of dogim yesh bohem v'chulei. The Mishnah made reference to different kinds of traps, and taking from those traps would be considered a theft mipnei darkei shalom. In other words, the Mishnah described the situation of theft. It's not real theft. The Gemara explains, but ba'oizli v'oihari, these are traps, different kinds of traps that have we'd call it a base keyhole and an interior. They have, even if you describe, let's say, a net, but a net, when it catches something, so it surrounds the item that's trapped in the net. It has an interior, it has a toch. And as such, the Gemara continues at the top of Daf Samach Aleph. Kulei Alma lo pligi, there is no disagreement, there's no argument. We saw in our Mishnah Tanakama and Rabbi Yossi, there's no argument regarding those kinds of traps. Rashi says at the top, Kulei Alma lo pligi, the kivon d'yeshlam toich, since they have an interior, konoloi kelov vavigezel gomor. The owner of those traps is said to acquire that which is trapped within them. The vessels acquire on behalf of the owner. So someone coming along taking from within those traps is guilty of theft. These traps have acquired on behalf of the owner. So who are you to come along to take from there? So that's not an issue. Ki pligi belechi v'kokri, the machlokes between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yossi has to do with these kind of traps, lechi and kokri. Lechi might be translated as a type of a hook, and Kokri Rashi gives an example of what that is. The main point is these are things that are effective means of trapping animals, but they don't have an interior, so that a fish caught on a hook is not contained within someone's vessel. So for you to come along and take from there, so you're not going to be considered guilty of formal theft, but nevertheless, don't take from someone else's hook. Take the fish caught on someone else's hook, because that's a violation of gezel mitnei darkei shalom, or a rabbinic form of gezel, but not absolute gezel. Metzias cheri sheita v'chulei. Rabbi Yossi omer gezel gomor. Omer Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda explains. Rabbi Yossi, who says gezel gomor, means gezel gomor mi divrehem. It's rabbinic gezel, taking from taking an item found by a deaf mute, an imbecile, or a minor. That's considered gezel gomor, but on a rabbinic level. Why is it not Torah level theft? The answer is that these people are called the incapables, the inepts. They don't have sufficient knowledge or cognizance of reality to enable them to acquire. The means of acquiring ownership of things requires a certain minimum level of da'as, of awareness, that they lack. However, Rabbi Yossi says, taking from them, stealing from them an item that they found, is considered gezel, complete, full-fledged gezel on a rabbinic level. The Tanakhama didn't say that. The Tanakhama said it's considered Gezel Mipnei Darkei Sholom. L'mai Nafka Mina. What difference is there between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yossi? After all, Rabbi Yossi himself didn't say it's full-fledged theft. It says theft on a rabbinic level. The Tanakhama says it's theft. It's considered theft because you're interfering with the preservation of public order. Darkei Sholom, want to preserve peace. What difference does it make, though, if you say it's rabbinic theft or it's Gezel Mipnei Darkei Sholom? The difference is Lahotzio B'dayonim. Can you approach a court in order for you to get the item back? In other words, let's imagine the father of the minor from whom the found item was taken. Can you ask the court to intervene? According to Rabbi Yossi, yes. According to the Tanakhama, no. Oni hamenakef b'roi shazayas ma shetachto v'chuli. The Mishnah described a poor man picking olives off a tree, and as he's picking olives off the tree, olives fall groundwards. Taking those would be considered gezel mitnei darkei sholom. You're taking something that the oni, the poor man who was taking from the payah or the shikha that was tithes left for the oni. You're taking something that he anticipated gathering up later on. What we just described then is a situation where the oni is collecting from the top of the tree, and we say that which is on the floor underneath, you shouldn't take it, but it wouldn't be considered theft if you take it. Tana in like venosan beyad hareze gezel gomor. If that oni was cutting things from the tree, and he took them in his hand, and after he took them in his hand, he then threw them groundwards. The oni is the owner, and your coming along and taking is considered full-fledged theft. So that from this you can see the Mishnah was describing a case of the oni is there at the top of the tree, and while he's picking some of the olives, others are falling groundwards, so that you are not to take. But if you do, that would not be Gezel Gomor. And now we have a story. According to the Ritva, the story is not dealing with a poor man gathering payah, but rather it involves someone who is gathering, or was going to an unowned tree, hefker tree, and you'll see Rav Kana is walking by, but it's a case of hefker or possibly a goy. The Gemara, Rav Kana, I do note, by the way, this is a maisa that lasts a number of lines. Rav Kana v'ka'ozil l'hutzel. Rav Kana was on his way to Hutzel. Hutzel was a town in which there was a rabbi. Rav Yoshia was the rabbi of that place. So Rav Kana is on his way to Hutzel. Chazia lo gavra, he notices a man to have a shodi ufye v'ka nasron tamri. There are different pshotim to explain this. According to the Ritva, the fellow on the top of the tree, he was dealing with a palm tree. Dates grow in clusters on something we call chorios sheldekel. So the Ritva says that this man at the top of the tree was cutting off clusters of dates. And as he was doing that, as he was cutting and throwing the clusters down, so some dates fell off. And that's what this means. He was shodi ufye. He was cutting off the clusters and throwing them down on the ground. V'kon nasrin tamri, and some dates got this detached and fell off to the side. Ozo ko mankit v'ochil. Rav Kana went and picked them up and ate them. According to the Ritva, Rav Kahana thought that the takuna of the Mishnah involves the takuna of the Mishnah says that the person, the oni, is entitled to that which is underneath him. That takuna applies only to shikha and payah, to the formal tithes that the oni is entitled to collect. But in a case of hefker, so dates that fall loose, dates that fall loose are not they're up for grabs. Anyone can come along and take them. Omar Lay, so the fellow on the top of the tree says, Chozi Mar Dibiyodoi Shadisinu, did you not see that I physically took possession of them? Biyodoi means with my hands, I threw them down. In other words, the dates that Rav Kahana was picking up were dates that originally the man those dates had originally been attached to those date clusters that the man had physically taken hold of, so that he was kaina, he acquired the dates, and as such they are not available for Rav Kahana to take. Omar Le, Rav Kahana said, "Ooh, me'asrei d'Rav Yoshia ata. You must be from you're from Rav Yoshia's town, from Hutzal. Kori Ale v'tzadik yisoid oylam." Now, saying that he comes from the town of Rav Yoshia indicates that you're knowledgeable of halacha, and therefore, because Rav Yoshia used to teach his community the laws, so you understood them, and hence. Rav Yoshia is credited with being Tzadik Yisoid Olam, the righteous who is the foundation of the world. We recommend looking into the Ritva commentary for further clarification of this particular incident. Ein memachin biyad aniyei nochrim belechet shichopeo mitnei darkei shalom. The Mishnah made reference to the poor amongst the Gentiles that also collect from leket shikopei, which are tithes that the Torah intends for the Jewish poor, but if Gentiles are there collecting also in order to preserve public peace, public tranquility, you don't protest their taking of it. Tana Rabbanan, Mefarnesim Aniyei Nochrim Im Aniyei Yisrael. When the Jewish community is making efforts to support its poor, so help to support the poor Gentiles that are also in the community. When you visit the sick, you're visiting the sick Jews that are sick. Visit the Gentiles as well. This is a situation that one can easily imagine in a hospital situation, Lo Aleinu, where you have Jewish people and Gentile people, often they're in the same room, so you should pay attention, show concern for the Gentile infirmed as well. When it comes to the burial of the dead, those who are involved with the burying of the Jewish dead in Jewish cemeteries should also help to bury the Gentile dead in Gentile cemeteries. We're not suggesting for a moment, and Rashi makes this point, we're not talking about having Jews and Gentiles buried together in the same cemetery. But if you, just like if you find a dead Jew who is unaccounted for, you bury him, so too if you find a dead Gentile who is not being taken care of, see to it that he is buried properly and with dignity in his cemetery. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.